Welcome to the monthly Awakening Together Satsang. And I am here with Nook Sanchez. Nook, you can say hello.
Hi, everybody.
Can you guys hear Nook okay? She is on speakerphone. Yes, okay, good, good, good. I have her turned up as loud as I can. Nook, are you able to hear me okay?
Yeah, I can. I've got a special headset, so I can hear you beautifully.
Okay, good. I knew that there were some hearing challenges there, so I wanted to check that out. All right, well, it looks like we have about 35 people here in the room, Nook. And, of course, there's some people on the radio. I don't know how many. I don't know if Lynn can tell us how many people are listening on the radio, but there are definitely people here. It's not just you and me.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned to you, I'll probably get started by asking you some questions. Oh, Lynn says there's 40 people on the radio now, so currently we have another person just in another room. So we have 76 people now, and they're probably still coming.
Yeah, you shouldn't have told me that.
Are you nervous now, Nook?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's silly.
I know, it's silly, but it's so nervous. Isn't that funny? Oh, that's wonderful. Okay, so there's just three of us.
Yeah, just you and me and the computer. That's all who's really here. Or Danielle.
Yes.
You, me, and Danielle. She's sitting over there. All right, so as I mentioned, this is what we call the Awakening Together Satsang. And for anyone who is new to the Satsang, because this is only our second one, we started in January, the way the Satsang works is that you are invited to ask questions of the guest. And the guest this time is Nook Sanchez. Usually I get it started, but it's not intended as an interview where I'm the interviewer. It's intended as a Satsang. So anyone who has a question for Nook, you can raise your hand, and I will turn the mic over to you, or you can type it on the board, and hopefully I'll see it. Sometimes things that get typed on the board get missed. If it scrolls away and I haven't seen it, feel free to type it on the board again, and hopefully I'll see it. But everyone is invited to ask questions. Now, I think most of the people here know Nook, but I don't want to assume that. There may be someone here that doesn't know Nook, so I think we should start with a general getting to know Nook. And I will tell you that I met Nook when she and I and Tomas and Cheryl Valentine, who was here a little bit ago, and Pamela Silberman were all teaching together at the Omega Institute, and that was a number of years ago. But that's when Tomas first told us that he had a lump on his neck, and he was asking us to get in a circle and laugh at it. Do you remember that, Nook?
I do.
And what impressed me with Nook first was her stories about her relationship with Tomas and how the two of them really took the course teachings seriously when it came to the special relationship, and they used their relationship to let go of obstacles to love's presence within themselves, and they did it in a very serious, very committed way, following guidance all the way. And as they shared their stories at Omega Institute, I recognized the sincerity of this practice, and I was very impressed. I'm always impressed with sincerity, and wanted to get to know them better. And so this is how our friendship started. Tomas did become sick, and I'm going to let Nook tell you a little more about that. But Tomas did become sick, and then at some point laid the body aside. And it was after that time when I invited Nook and her friend Stacy to come to Israel with me. And we went to Israel for, I think it was about 10 days, and we got to know each other a little better there. So that's just a little bit about my relationship with Nook, how I know Nook. But Nook, what I would like to do is I would like to, you know, I mentioned that you and Tomas, you know, really used the course teachings and used the special relationship you had, turned it over so that it could become a holy relationship, and we're letting go of the obstacles to love's presence that each of you had within yourselves. Could you kind of maybe start there and tell the story of Tomas's illness and how that affected you, and kind of bring us up to date from there?
Sure, you've done a gorgeous job. Thank you very much. That was wonderful. Thanks, Regina. Yeah, Tanakh and I go way back. We knew each other for 28 years. We met, I think it was 28 years. We met in 1984. And, you know, I go back that far because I have to mention a commitment that we made, even though we had no idea of the depth of that commitment at the time. That would take quite a few years before it would be revealed to us, yeah? But when we met, we kind of remembered that human love, romantic love, or any kind of love, human love, brings with it suffering. And I don't know how we remembered that, but there was that memory. And so we didn't want to suffer from that kind of human love any longer. Both of us had had broken relationships and had very difficult childhoods as well. So we made a vow together, and the vow was no matter what and no matter who might seem to come between us, let us never abandon each other. Now, that might sound like a very simple, simplistic vow, but I tell you what, if you remain true to that vow, there's no way in the world you can ever hate each other or abandon each other. Yes, you know, you might have to separate in form, but communication remains, and that's what we did. In fact, we went over a period of many years, you know, we were married, and then we were led by Holy Spirit to take the course's teachings literally about transferring our relationship from the special relationship to a holy relationship. But at one point in our marriage, and, you know, and nobody else has to do this, so don't think you have to do this, guys. It's just that we felt like at the time we were pioneers, and it was appropriate. It was very much guided by Holy Spirit. We were asked to let go of the marriage, which was the form of our relationship, in order to save the content, the relationship itself. Yeah? And through that letting go of the form of the relationship, we found that the love we had between us was far, far greater than we could have ever imagined. In fact, over time, it became indestructible, and communication between us became indestructible. And nothing could come between us, literally. And then, as Regina was saying before, Tomas developed a lump in his neck, and that turned into, well, that was cancer. And in December of 2010, he left the body through cancer, through disease. And may I just say here that while I would... At the time, while I would have liked to have said that he laid the body aside, it's since been revealed to me by Jesus himself that when we die or leave the body, even though it's an illusion, when we leave the body through, you know, through pain or through suffering or through old age, as he speaks of in the Course, or an accident, we do not lay the body aside. And this is something that I've only recently learned. It's not something I knew before. When Jesus speaks about laying the body aside, we lay the body aside because we've overcome death. And this is very difficult at first for the ego to understand because it's kind of a paradox. And, you know, this is addressed in the new book, called The End, let me think about the title.
The End of Death.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You know, I don't trust my mind either, so I looked it up just before I called you. Go ahead.
Thank you. Because the first book we wrote was called Take Me to Truth. And just lately, I mean, I've had to have a giggle. Just lately, I've been mixing those two titles up. Take Me to Death and The End of Truth. So you have to have a laugh. you right? Okay. But no, seriously, guys, it was called The End of Death. Yeah. So, it was a huge catalyst when Tamás left the body through disease. It was the greatest catalyst for me in going through, well, I had to go through a breakdown in order to have a massive breakthrough. Put it another way is that I was on my knees at one point after Tamás left. Most of you know this story anyway, so I won't go in depth. But I had to get to a point where I knew nothing. Even after writing a book about A Course in Miracles, even after walking the path of undoing the special relationship, all of that, right? I had to get on my knees and know nothing in the face of my God. Absolutely nothing. Down to the point where, and as many of you know, at that point, I didn't even know if there was a God. And this is after 20 years of A Course in Miracles, so you can imagine just how low I was at that point. But at that point, it was a huge breakthrough. And basically, I had to choose, whether I wanted to understand what had happened or whether I desired the peace of God first. And I've explained this before, but I can't say it often enough. It was a humongous turning point for me because what I realized through that breakdown and breakthrough was that while we desire understanding of anything, particularly when, we're in darkness and confusion, it'll be the ego that wants to understand. And therefore, the Holy Spirit cannot help us. We're in a state where we're blocked off from any understanding and any help. It's not until we actually say, hey, listen, I want the peace of God more than I want understanding, more than I want my confusion cleared. And it's at that point we truly do surrender because we don't know what understanding is. I had no idea what understanding was. I thought I did, but by God, I knew nothing, nothing, nothing at all. And it was then when I sought the peace of God above all else, at that deep surrender, that was when the peace of God came upon me. And there are no words to explain the actual experience of that. It's beyond words. But what I can say is that in the peace of God, all understanding lies. Now, the ego won't understand that, but it's in claiming the peace of God that the understanding is given us. And that's what happened to me. The understanding was given to me. I'm not saying it was given to me all at once, but the first step was given to me, a very clear step. And the first step was Jesus asking. That's where he came in for me. And he came in and asked me to make a clear and unequivocal decision for only truth, only the will of God. And I thought I had been doing that up until that point, but he showed me very clearly that I hadn't. And we use, in our workshops, we use the symbol of the two canoes in the ocean, the canoe of the Holy Spirit and the canoe of the ego. And I was doing what everybody else does, which is I had a foot in each canoe, And when a storm comes along, when you're in the middle of the ocean, you've got a foot in each canoe, your ass is grass. Just to put it mildly, right?
Yeah, I guess
we all know that, right?
So
that's what happened to me. He showed me that vividly and told me to take my foot out of the other canoe. And to anything that showed up that was not of God, that I was to deny. And I don't mean the ego's form of denial. I'm talking about the Holy Spirit's form of denial, which is very, very different. It's in chapter 2. It's called True Denial. And, I thought I knew that, but I didn't. And that's what I had to learn. So it was just huge for me. And since then, with that tremendous kind of awakening that occurred at the time, I was given a series of transmissions from Jesus that ended up being three volumes called The End of Death. Volume 1 has just been released, and then hopefully in the next few months we'll have the time to do Volume 2, to edit it and get that out as well. And then Volume 3, to be honest, is not finished yet because there's more I have to learn before it can be finished. So I'm not there yet, guys, but I'm getting there. But we're all there. This is the paradox, right? This is what I'm learning. It's already there. It's just that we don't know it yet. So we need to undo what we've learned. Everything that we've learned. And I mean everything we've learned in order to realize that we're already there and to realize who we really are, because it's all about that. It's all about realizing that we are the child, and I mean child with a capital C, of God. And there's only one of us here. Yeah.
All right.
And that's it.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, well, I do have a number of questions, and maybe some other people have questions too. And some of my questions come from the fact that you are teaching things that I haven't heard before, and I'm sure that you're aware of that. And so as a result, I have questions. All right?
Yes.
Okay. The very first question has to do with Tomas. I read a portion of your book, the portion that you sent me, a portion of The End of Death, and I believe it's in the introduction, but again, my mind is pretty terrible, so I could be wrong about that, but I believe it's in the introduction, where you state that Tomas woke up in the dream, but not from the dream. Could you talk a little more about what you meant by that?
Yeah, thanks, Regina. It's good. This is part of the transmission that I've been receiving since January 2011. Oh, boy, where to start with that one?
Sorry.
What a doozy.
I think, to be honest, I think all of my questions are doozies.
let me just ask Holy Spirit where to go with this.
And go, it's okay to be still for a moment. That's allowed.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay. What's being revealed to me by Jesus is that the entire ego dream is supported by one central nucleus. And if you take the nucleus out of the dream, the whole ego dream collapses. And I'm talking about the ego dream, the horizontal timeline of the separation, what Jesus calls the separation in the Course in Miracles. There's one nucleus. There's not many. There's just one. And this one nucleus is the concept of death. And I mean, I'm talking physical death here, right? Physical death. And all forms of death after that. So what I mean by all forms of death after that is any feeling that is not supremely joyous and loving. Yeah. And we've all experienced lots of that in this lifetime, haven't we, right? So they're all forms of death. Disease, poverty, scarcity of any kind, conflict. Jealousy, anger, judgment, all these things are all forms of death. There's no hierarchy of illusions within the dream. So what was revealed to me is that death is the core nucleus of the entire ego dream since the beginning of time till the end of time. And there have been many superb teachings and very helpful teachings on the planet, spiritual teachings that have been exceptionally helpful in undoing or helping to undo the ego thought system. Yet the teaching that Jesus is bringing in through miracles, which are vertical, which collapse the concept of time, these teachings are aimed at us undoing the concept of death, including the concept of physical death. Now, this teaching is not about physical immortality. Only the ego would be obsessed with such an insane idea. It's not at all about physical immortality. But what Jesus is saying here is that there are two things going, hang on a minute, okay, I'm getting a message. So hold on for a second.
Sure, of course.
Many masters in the dream, in the ego's dream, the beginning of time, many spiritual masters have indeed awoken in the dream, in the ego's dream, right? But many of those masters have awoken and still left the body through disease or old age or through being hurt in some form, the physical body, yeah? They were not able to completely overcome the ego's dream of attack. Death is a form of attack, and while we believe that death is real, we will fear God. There still will be unconscious guilt remaining. So Jesus is asking us to overcome the ego's central dream of death completely. What happens is that Jesus, 2,000 years ago when he came into the dream, he came in to undo the concept of separation, to establishing the atonement on behalf of the whole sonship. And what he effectively did in layman's terms is that he undid the entire ego dream from the beginning of time till the end of time through his resurrection. He overcame the central dream, which is death. Okay? And when he did that, he overcame everything for us. He overcame all sickness, all disease, all conflict. He overcame poverty. He overcame every single affliction that the ego could possibly dream of. He did it through his establishment of the atonement and through his resurrection. Yeah. And then he asked for us to follow him and do the same thing. But we were too terrified of God's love at that time to be able to totally follow through with that. It's taken 2,000 years in the illusion of time before he's come back with A Course in Miracles, or comes through with A Course in Miracles as a roadmap to lead us back to his original message back then, yeah? Which is that we don't need to do anything, right? The miracle doesn't do anything. All it does is undo. So it is a process of undoing. But let me just get back to the first point here, which is Jesus was the first amongst the one Son of God who completely overcame the ego's central dream of death. He undid it completely. So he awoke from the entire dream of death, whereas many masters after that have awoken in the dream. You know, like Tomas, I've got to give you an example here. You know, Tomas really did awaken. There was a huge awakening quite some time before he left the body. But it was clear to me later that he had awoken in the dream but not from the dream, because he still had not completely overcome his guilt, the guilt. It's just one guilt that we all share, and it's all an illusion anyway. And he allowed the body to have power over his mind, yeah? Which is impossible in truth. But that's what happens when somebody dies from disease or old age or any kind of attack whatsoever. So there's a very big difference between between awakening in the dream, which is extremely helpful still, as Thomas did and many did previous to him. But what Jesus is asking us is to awaken completely from the dream of death, which means that, as he says there, we're not sick, we're not old, nor are we hurt. We simply lay the body aside in perfect joy, and then the dream, there's no more reincarnation or dream of birth and death. It's the quickest way of collapsing the horizontal timeline. So that is why he spends such a large portion of A Course in Miracles speaking about the reinterpretation of our last special relationship, the last one that we will willingly give to the Holy Spirit to reinterpret and to overcome, and that is our relationship with the body.
All right. Well, someone has their hand up, so I don't want to keep this going too long. I want to turn it over, but I'm still not clear, so I want to ask the question again, and I'll tell you what I'm not clear on.
Yep.
When you say awaken in the dream, I mean, I think I understand what awaken from the dream means. I don't know if I understand exactly what you mean when you say awaken in the dream. Would that be like just being transcendent but still perceiving? Is that what you mean?
Still perceiving. I don't think we could be in the dream if we weren't perceiving. I think that's an impossibility.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know that for sure.
You don't know for sure?
I have, no.
Okay,
I don't
okay.
know. But there is a clear definition between awakening in the dream. What I mean by that is we've had many awakened masters in the dream, but they were still claimed by seeming disease and death.
Okay.
Although, really, Regina, there was one, it's Yogananda. I believe he left the body in pristine condition.
Well, there are a number I can think of. Nisargadatta Maharaj, Ramana Maharshi, even Buddha, I believe the body had disease. So, you know, so there are a lot of masters that many of us would see as awake that, you know, by this definition, I guess you're saying something different is what I'm pointing out. And I'm not going to claim to know what the truth is. I think that would be foolish on my part. But I'm not certain yet also that that's true, that there would not be the appearance of disease. And that's one reason why I invited you here. I think it's worth it for us to discuss this openly and clearly and then let everyone, go within themselves and find what they need to find. I mean, that's what we need to look at. But like I said, Jody has her hand up. So let me turn this over to Jody and we'll see where she takes us. Okay. So Jody, I'm going to release the mic and turn it over to you. And I've released the mic and nothing's happening yet. Hold on. Jody, did you want to take the mic and ask Nook a question? Okay. All right, so maybe not, Nook. I didn't see.
I just kind of this is not, these teachings are not from me. I need to make this very clear. It's got nothing to do with Nook. All right?
I understand.
These teachings are from Jesus. And they're in A Course in Miracles. I taught this for 20 years. What I'm saying is I didn't see it. I didn't see any of this in the Course, and neither did Thomas. It really took quite a breaking down of the ego for me and a surrender, a total surrender, in order to be able to be open enough to see Jesus' deeper teaching. And that's what the end of death is. There's a lot that is directly from Jesus in the Course in Miracles in the end of death too. But here's a quote, one of the first quotes that kind of split my mind. cracked me over the head, I should say. And I was like, wow. He says this: a broken body shows the mind has not been healed. A miracle of healing proves the separation is without effect. In other words, a miracle of feeling proves the separation is without consequences, yeah? And that a broken body, a sick or diseased body or an aged body shows the mind has not been completely healed, yeah? So he is asking us to do exactly as he did when he was here, which is to completely realize that we are the Christ while we're here in a body. Otherwise, he says the central dream of death must be overcome. And, you know, we need, where else but in the body, this one made me laugh, where else but in the body will we awaken from the dream of physical birth? And that got me. There was no way out of that one. It was like, oh my God, that's so true. Where else but in the body will we awaken from the dream of death? We need the body totally abdicated to the Holy Spirit in order to have our final hurdle transcended, and that is the body. Otherwise, we're attracted again to the cycle of birth and death. Did you read the bathtub analogy, Regina?
I don't remember the bathtub analogy, so I'm going to say no.
Okay. That's also in the end of death, and it's...
Well, I don't have the whole book, remember. I only have a small portion that you sent me.
Those who haven't heard this, let me try and rephrase it again. It was a very, very simple analogy to give people kind of a hawk-eye view of what this looks like, is that imagine an Olympic-sized swimming pool bath filled with water. And the water is going to represent the ego's dream of suffering. Since the beginning of time, or the beginning of the separation, till the end of time. Okay, so it's an Olympic-sized swimming pool bathtub that is filled with the toxic water of the ego's dream. Now, in the bottom of this Olympic-sized bath of toxic water, is a giant plug. And on that plug is the word death. D-E-A-T-H. Death. Yeah. Now what I was given was that all spiritual teachings are helpful. Anything that's going to undo fear, the fear of God, in other words, the fear of our holy soul, is going to be helpful. Incredibly helpful. It doesn't matter which teaching, but they'll all be helpful. But what I was shown is in the horizontal plane of time, these teachings are responsible for taking out maybe one drop of that bath every 1,000 years. Now, in the illusion of time, it's going to take hundreds of thousands of years, perhaps even millions of years, before that Olympic-sized swimming pool bath would be finally emptied of suffering, yeah, and the whole dream of birth and death completely overcome. Now, this is a contrast that I was shown, is that with these teachings of Jesus, he reaches into that giant bathtub and he just wrenches that plug right out of that bath, and the entire bathtub is drained within moments. Because what he's done is he's pulled the central dream out of the entire horizontal timeline, and that's the concept of death. Okay, he's pulled it out, and therefore time collapses. Without death, there is no time. It's impossible. Death is the central illusion. And that's the analogy that I was given. Now, let me just kind of back up here a little bit to help you understand this, because this is extremely threatening. I mean, this frightened the life out of me, I have to tell you, back in 2011 when it was revealed to me. And it still does in our no-day self-retreats, in our power of power retreats, when we come to the death exercises that we do. And this is to ask the question, to find out what lies upon our inner altar. No matter how spiritual we are, no matter how devoted to the spiritual path we are, is to look deeply, and this is what Jesus asked me to do. I had to do this. I had to do this myself, right? And I just seemingly lost my best soul buddy through death, through disease. And he asked me, look, have a look what you have on your central altar. What is it? What is it? Is it God's love? Is it really God's love? And I didn't know how to answer that, so the next question that he asked me is that he asked me, what do you believe the inevitable outcome of life is here in the ego's dream? What do you believe? And I had to fess up and say, well, the inevitable outcome of all life in the ego dream is death. And then he showed me something really shocking. We can only ever have one devotion on our inner altar at any one time. Now, this remains hidden, secret, and unconscious for most of our lives until we decide to join with the Holy Spirit and look at it. Yeah. And when I said that, you know, my belief was death, the inevitable and natural outcome of life is death, he explained to me that I was terrified of God. He didn't use the word fear. He used the word terror. That I was terrified of God.
And
understand why that was.
And look, can I ask you a question? Is there, because a few moments ago, I thought I heard you say that, of course, you aren't talking about physical immortality. Only the ego would be obsessed with that. And of course, you know, so I want to know, has the idea in your mind, like when you used to say that the inevitable outcome of life was death, and yet you still, you know, don't see physical immortality as even necessary, has the end of physical, of this body, this personality, does that have a different meaning for you now than it did before? Has something shifted there in your mind? Like, did you really believe in death before, and now you can...
But let me finish this first point.
Sure, sure.
Can I get back to that in a second?
Yes.
I just want to finish this off succinctly, or try to. Is that what Jesus showed me is that while I believe that life could be claimed by death, that God's life could be claimed by death, I had a belief in death. Death was on my inner altar. Now, while I believed in death, I would be terrified of God while I believed in death, right? Now, what he asked me was to learn to undo my attraction to death, because that's what this is, to undo my attraction to death and my devotion to death, because it represented the ego's version of its God. And there's a huge exercise in the end of death that reveals that to people, that asks them to do these exercises on their own. So you can reveal it yourself. Don't listen to me. Don't believe me even, right? You do these exercises yourself and see what the Holy Spirit within reveals to you when you do these exercises. And that will tell you. This is about self-revelation. This is not coming from me, yeah? So, you know, while we believe in death, or while I believe in death, then I was shown that I could not believe in God. It would be impossible. Because if I believe that there is an opposite to God's life, I must believe that there's an opposite to God. And that's what I had on my inner altar. Yeah. So getting back to your other question too, Regina.
Yes.
Could you ask that again?
Yeah, it's a question I'm having trouble asking, because the, you know, the words are kind of funky, so you kind of have to listen. But, you know, you're mentioning that before, you know, you thought the inevitable outcome of life was death, right? And then you also mentioned earlier, unless I misheard you, you mentioned earlier that, you know, this isn't about immortal body. You know, only the ego would be obsessed with immortal body. And so if I'm understanding you correctly, what you're talking about is at some point, you know, a body is laid down. I think I'm hearing that it won't be old age or death if the mind is perfectly healed, but the body will be laid down. And of course, to some people, you know, they're gonna view that as a death. So I think what I'm trying to ask is, has there been a shift in your mind from what you used to think happened at that perceived point of death, and what now would happen to a healed mind at that perceived point of death when the body is laid down, but to the people still here with unhealed minds, it looks like a death? Is there a shift in your mind about a difference there?
Well, thanks. That's a great question. All I can say right now is that the level of trust that is being developed for myself recently, and I mean, you know, because it's a shift of trust from the ego thought system and the ego God to the Holy Spirit thought system and the Holy Self, what I call the Holy Self, yeah? That, the leap of faith, or the leap of trust that has been made has been ginormous for me. And from where I'm at right now, and I can't speak about the future because I'm not there, not that there is any future, but from where I'm at right now is that I know unequivocally that when the choice to leave this body is made, it will be made by God Himself as my Holy Self. It's not going to be made with the ego. That I know unequivocally now. I couldn't have said this a few months ago because I hadn't reached that stage. But right now I can safely say that that decision to leave the body will be made by the Holy Spirit. And it will be made completely with joy and with the most incredible gratitude at that point in time. Because then I will know, and I already kind of know this now, is that I'm done with the body, right? It has no more use any longer, that the Holy Spirit's purpose has been fulfilled as far as I could go, and that is that. There's no longer an attraction to be in a dense body any longer, because I will have joined the Christ in proving to myself, and not proof, it is proof. He says proof. And he also uses the word demonstrate many times to say the same thing. I would have demonstrated by that stage through my trust and my level of faith that the body cannot be victimized by the ego once the body is completely turned over to the Holy Spirit's purpose. But I mean it has to be completely turned over. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that I'm there yet. You know, I still take magic in the form of, supplements, you know. Mind you, I'm taking far less than I ever was before. But see, this is all part of the teaching too. I had to learn that anything that I control or that I think I control is an attack on God, which is a defense against God. It's just like sickness is a defense against God. Death is a defense against God. All of these things, as Jesus explains, is a defense against truth, which is God, right?
Okay, so if I'm hearing you correctly, then the shift that occurred in your mind, or the difference between death and laying the body down, death is a decision made with the ego because there's still a fear of God present. Laying the body down is a decision made by the God Self because there's no more need for the body. Is that a clear?
Beautifully said.
Okay, good. Wayne had his hand up a little bit ago. I don't know, he put it down, but I'm going to release the mic and see if he picks it up. Yes, he's put it back up. So, Wayne, the mic is yours.
Hi, how you doing? Hi, Nook. What's up? How's that sound? Can I sound coming in well? Hey, Dove. Hey, what's up, everyone? The question I had was, first of all, Nook, it's a pleasure to speak with you. I haven't ever spoken with you before, but I've been on your website enough to feel like I know you. And I loved your book. I downloaded it on Kindle about a week ago, and or whenever it came out. And one of the things I wanted to ask you was, you often speak in terms of receiving information and the downloads and so forth. When I first read the course, it seems to me that a lot of what you are speaking about is in the course. It's not necessarily new information, but perhaps not where for lack of a better term, the opinion leaders or the people who led the teachings of the Course in Miracles took the students that they taught and with the course. In other words, the backdrop and the context and the premise and the edifice which they built up the course with was not based on this type of edifice, this premise. And if you read What is Death, everything you're saying almost is right there. There's so many areas where Jesus says it's madness to think of life in terms of being born, getting older, and dying. If you just rework the premise, everything you're saying is there. So is that the revelation you're speaking of, that you just looking at the course differently, and we should look at the course again and rework the way we look at the course?
Wait, he can't hear you. I'll tell you one more on the mic.
Turn it upside down almost? Or is there sort of a new information that you've received that's sort of outside the scope of the course?
Okay, one moment, Nook. I'll tell you when we have the mic.
Good to meet you.
All right, Nook, you're back on the mic. You can answer here now.
Oh, great. Thanks so much, Wayne. Lovely to meet you. And thanks. Because it's very valuable what you just asked there, is that this is not new information. This is not a new teaching. None of this is new. It's in the course. Everything is in the course. As you've already seen, Wayne, much of what's in the end of death is in A Course in Miracles. All of it is in A Course in Miracles. It's just that through my own experience and with others who have also walked a similar path this last 2 years, we have such a tremendous unconscious terror of our God self or our holy self, which is the God self, that we are reluctant, or were reluctant, I was reluctant, to see these teachings in A Course in Miracles. And so the seeming loss of Tanaka's body was the catalyst to, I guess, break me down and break me through to the point of total surrender and total not knowing. And it was in that state of not knowing, complete state of not knowing, that I was open, or broken open, it sounds terrible, but I guess broken open, in order to really hear the message of the Course, but to hear it internally, to receive it internally. Since then, and I know this is very blasphemous, and if I had heard this 3 years ago, I would have thought it's total blasphemy, but Jesus himself is very much present. And I've been told, and do completely believe this, is that he's very much present to every single one of us at any point that we're ready to receive him. Yeah. For me, I was too terrified to receive direct joining with Jesus and his teachings for quite some time there. I was okay with the Holy Spirit. That was good. But there was no way in the world I was ready to have an up-close and personal relationship on a regular and consistent basis with Jesus himself. There was a lot of healing around that, great healing, which I would love to share one day. And what I was told recently is that everybody can have that same relationship with Jesus as they undo their own fear of the holy self, or the God self. It becomes a very natural relationship. So everybody could receive the same messages that I've received. no difference between me or anybody else. And many of us are receiving the same messages. This is just mind-blowing and heart-opening. I have received so many emails from, you know, amazing people all around the globe who are receiving this exact same message at the end of death themselves. They're receiving it. So it's there. It's there in the course. And I guess the tool of the end of death, the book, would be to perhaps help lower our fear of our God self and to help develop the trust in listening within to our own guidance. It's all about our own guidance. And it's all about, because that's where the truth comes from. In my experience, the truth doesn't come from anywhere else except from our own guidance. Yes, we can use other teachings like the Course, etc., to point to the truth, but the truth, as I found out, is what comes from within. It doesn't come from anywhere else. It comes from within. Every one of us has it within. And, you know, my job, I've been told, just like Regina's job is, or any other teacher of God, is to help people to develop the trust in listening to the truth within, so this truth can be revealed from within. And we know truth when we hear it, because there's this incredible ping, you know? And we know untruth when we hear it, because there's a thud. Yes. And, so that's all the end of death will do. If you're ready to read it and it calls to you, go for it. If you're not, then don't, because the timing's not right. If I had read the end of death 4 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to take it in, to be honest with you. I would have burnt it. I would have burnt my own book. That's funny. Because I was so entrenched in the metaphorical interpretation of A Course in Miracles, that I just could not see the literal meaning in there. It just frightened me too much. So I hope that helps some.
Okay. In NTI, 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and 16, it talks about what you might be calling awakening in the dream. I don't know for sure. We're going to talk about this next, but it talks about what NTI calls the fourth stage of the spiritual path, where there is definitely still perception, but the one that is experiencing perception at this fourth stage is completely transcendent of perception. So, you know, like that one eats food but has no need for food. That one talks to brothers but doesn't see brothers. It says all of these types of things to try and paint the picture of still perceiving but yet being transcendent of the perception. And then it says, of course, this one, since the illusion is illusion, this one will also pass. It says, let me just read it for you. It says, the one that seems to be in the fourth stage is but a symbol of the truth that is. So this one must pass away also. But in its passing, you pass from a final illusion of beauty to beauty that cannot be contained in illusion. You pass from form, which reflects light, to light which shines into form.
Oh, yeah.
You shall not know death in your passing from the fourth phase to light, for this passing is recognition of life. So I was going to ask you if this is the same as of what you're saying, but I think I already heard that in your sigh there.
Yeah. That is just beautiful. You know what? I read that in NTI, and I did not understand that.
Yeah, so I think that, I mean, I don't know, because, you know, it's hard when we're playing with words, but I think that maybe that is what you would, what would you call it? I'm not going to say that's what you would call it. Let me ask you, that fourth stage, so before the passing, right, before laying the body down, that fourth stage, is that what you would call awake in the dream, or is that awake from the dream, but yet somehow still perceiving? Do you have any ideas about that?
All I have is a feeling. At the moment, and I would say awakening from the dream, because by that stage, we're still in form, right?
Yes.
But we have learned that form, which is effect, is not at the level of cause. What we've done is what Jesus speaks about in the manual teaches, is we've reversed the thinking of the world entirely. And so therefore, we have realized that the only cause is in the mind and effects cannot be caused. So sickness, disease, pain, all of these things have become totally obsolete. They can't affect us, but we're still at form. It's still at form. And then I've been told through Jesus, which goes with this, that is the stage where we go from form to life. And you've used exactly the same words,
yes,
in TI. So I've got the chills while I'm sitting here because that is awesome. That is absolutely awesome. And what I would call the stage of transfiguration, because there's no more need for form. There's no more need to be contained by a solid form. You know, after that, I know nothing from where I'm at right now, and nor do I care to know anything after that. Because what I'm finding in my own journey at the moment is just minute to minute to minute, am I with God or am I not with God? You know, and the contrast between the two is so great that I can't afford to be 1 minute out of God's presence now, where I'm at right now. So I'm not quite sure where I would fit in all of this, but the joy is so great now that I don't care. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
You know what I mean with you, not
yes.
sure, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's just like, who gives a damn? I mean, who gives a damn? Because when you get to this stage of having so much joy and just being a servant of, you know, love without opposite, and then to be told it gets better, it's like, I can't even go there. I trust it will get better, but my God, this is the best it's ever been for me. What about you?
Well, yeah, but I actually had a story I wanted to tell you, and you're asking what about you? That's the transition to the story. I do experience just unbelievable joy, and a large number of things do not affect me. And in fact, where I used to have multiple problems a day, multiple worries or concerns a day, now I have a problem once or twice a year. So I wouldn't say that I'm problem-free. I wouldn't say that I'm fully transcendent, but I would say there's a heck of a difference from before.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that's wonderful.
But,
I can hear it in your voice.
But yesterday, there's no judgment or negativity about what happened yesterday, but I did want to share this with you. I thought it was very interesting that it should happen the day before this satsang. Yesterday, I faced the fear of death, at least to some degree. I don't know if you know, but I recently broke my wrist, which literally was no big deal. That was one of those transcendent experiences. I broke the wrist and there was no change to the joy whatsoever. I mean, everything was just hunky-dory. I was laughing and giggling and having fun the whole time. There's a thought, though, that keeps showing up, you know, different people sharing it with me, about I need to be careful about how much swelling happens, that if there's too much swelling, if it cuts off the circulation, you know, from the cast, that I should go to the emergency room. You know, Danielle's a nurse. She's mentioned that to me. Brent Haskell is a doctor. He's mentioned that to me. And I still was like, oh, no, I think I'm fine. Everything feels fine. And then yesterday, another friend of mine, Lisa Hansen, is a nurse, and she wrote in Facebook something like, if you feel any numbness, in all capitals, you know, in the any, if you feel any numbness, you know, go to the emergency room right away. And I actually feel numbness a lot. And at first that didn't affect me. I just said, well, you know, I said, that's really difficult, or that's really hard to tell, Lisa, because, you know, it does feel like my arm falls asleep a lot, and I really didn't think anything of it, but somehow that idea that had been repeated, somehow it got in there yesterday. And what happened was yesterday my arm was significantly more numb than usual. I also began to notice numbness in my feet, which can be a sign of poor circulation, sign of a circulation emergency. My vision blurred significantly. I couldn't see things that I can normally see. I was extremely lightheaded, kind of like a low blood sugar feeling. And so this thought was running in the mind that the cast is too tight and I needed to go to the emergency room immediately. This was an emergency situation. Yet at the same time, Nook, and I have to emphasize, and I know you would do the same thing if you were telling the story, I have to emphasize that I had an intuition and I was trusting the intuition. The intuition told me to do nothing. And at some point it even seemed like my fingers on the hand where the cast is were turning blue and gray, and the mind was just going crazy, telling me, you know, that I was going to die. And yet the intuition hung in to do nothing. And in fact, the intuition even told me that mind was making this up, that mind has the power to, you know, cause all of these symptoms. Mind has the power to, you know, cause you to feel that your fingers are blue and that nothing was even happening, that this was, even at the level of form, imaginary, although it seemed real. This is what intuition was telling me. So I went about my day. I, you know, went and bought groceries. I walked the dog. I cooked meal for family. I never said a thing to anyone. And the whole time, there's like, on the one hand, there's this panic, this very loud panic. And on the other hand, I was settled in the decision to let this pass. And when I went to bed, even when I went to bed, the mind was saying, you know, you're going to go to bed and you're going to die. You know, you're stupid. You're going to go to bed and you're going to die. and the intuition was just, you know, just no, you know, just very quiet no. And, you know, and so I went to bed and I woke up and everything's fine. But I just thought it was interesting that I feel like I don't feel any more transcendent today than I would have 2 days ago. So I wouldn't tell anybody that I faced the fear of death and now I'm awake or anything bogus like that. But I feel like, for lack of better words, maybe a chunk passed through.
I can feel it. I have to tell you, I have a chill. It hasn't left me. So there's some huge healing that's going on. Because there's only one mind, you've just helped to heal me and everyone, right? Because it's huge what you did. Huge. Oh, I've still got the chills.
Yeah, well, it was an interesting day because, you know, I just trusted the intuition. But boy, that mind was loud at telling me how stupid I was and I was going to die.
Oh, my God. You know, what you've just done is what I call step four of accepting the atonement, right? Which is the full healing. But we can't really accept the atonement and do it, you know, really truly accept the atonement unless we're willing to apply exactly what you've done. Well, actually, you did two things. I don't know if you're aware of it even, right?
Well, go ahead, tell me what you heard.
The first thing you did, I don't know if it's conscious, it'd be great to find out from you, is, you know, I have these steps. There are seven steps to you know, atonement. Very simply, just to make it easy. The first step is to apply true denial. In other words, to recall that there's only one power, and it's God's loving will, right? There's not two powers. So, in effect, what you did, even though you were confronted with the ego screaming at you that you're going to die, you're going to die, you're going to die, you decided on some level that you were going to trust your intuition, which is God's will. Is that what happened?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And the fourth principle, which is to look past appearances. This is something that I didn't know for 20 years of studying the Course, is to look beyond what our physical senses are telling us is reality. And in your case, you had that swelling, and plus you had friends that still believed in the ego's laws of death and disease and God knows what else, that were telling you, come on, wake up. You need to do something, yeah? And, you know, this is what you did. You just decided, look, I'm going to look past appearances. Is that what you did?
Well, but with intuition, the interesting thing is, and I guess that's part of what I want to emphasize, because I think people can make wrong choices sometimes. Yeah. You know, when I originally broke my wrist, you know, like I said, I was so happy, and that did not change the happiness, that I really didn't even think much of the wrist, except that it was just a funny joke. And I was texting Danielle. I was skiing when it happened, and Danielle was at home, and I was texting Danielle and Jasmine, and I said, guess who's texting you with her left hand because she sprained her right hand skiing? And Danielle wrote back and said, how do you know it's not a fracture? And then I felt an intuition like, oh yeah, like I better go get it checked. You know, that's why Danielle said that, because I didn't think of that myself. And so this was, you know, the universe speaking through Danielle. And so then I had the intuition to go get it checked, and I did. So I didn't have an intuition there to attempt what I would call a bone healing. But I have done that before, and anybody who knows me knows that story. I did break a toe before. And the intuition was to sit down and let it be healed, and it was in just a few moments. So I think for me the difference is the intuition, because we don't know what anything is for. You know, I'm kind of reminded in the Course where Jesus says something about, you know, if we're selecting the miracles, they could be severely misguided, and that miracles should be under Christ's consciousness or Christ's direction, or something like that. Do you want to talk about that for a moment and tell me how you feel about that?
Sure. I mean, I agree with you entirely. Miracles have to be under Christ
control, maybe?
Yeah. Decision. It's his decision, not ours. That's really important. But there are still a number of things we need to do. And, I mean, this is walking the razor's edge, as you know, Regina. And, you know, that's why I've taken so much time to write these volumes of The End of Death, because there's certain things that need to be explained and over-explained and repeated, because otherwise the spiritual ego gets a hold of these principles and then just lets chaos rule, yeah? You know, we can't... I'm speaking from experience. Let me speak from experience. I could not really forgive or do the essential principles of quantum forgiveness or the atonement. I couldn't really do that until such time as I developed some trust in the Holy Spirit, yeah? Otherwise, it's the ego trying to heal. It's the spiritual ego saying, look at me, I can heal. And, I mean, we all do it. Most of, you know, whatever, in whatever way, shape or form, we attempted to do it through the ego. And it's about learning first to go within and to develop a relationship. You call it intuition, I call it the Holy Spirit, whatever, it's the same thing. I believe it's the same thing. And to listen in each moment as to what internal guidance is giving us. And it's that we need to learn to trust. If we don't trust that, then we could try to manipulate reality as we have done all this time. I mean, the whole ego dream was made by us. That's how powerful we are. We made sickness and death and conflict and God knows everything in between, and now we're trying to undo it. But the thing is that we can't undo anything through the ego. It's impossible. And we can't heal anything through the ego. Anything that, as you know, look, anything we try and heal through the ego, the body or relationship or whatever, all we're doing is we're shifting among illusions. We're just trying to make the illusion of sickness morph into the illusion of health. And that's not real miracle making. It's certainly miracle working. What I have noticed, true miracles for me, is when I completely surrender my will, my independent will, to have any outcome whatsoever. And it's in that true intuition or the Holy Spirit can speak through me and to guide me, just as he did through you, to let you know first off when the wrist was broken that you listened to the Holy Spirit's voice through Danielle.
Yeah.
It could be a pastor.
Yeah, I was planning to keep skiing.
Oh, Boy and girl. But yeah, yeah. So it's about developing that relationship first. And, you know, that's a whole other story, developing that deep, deep relationship, because in order to develop that level of trust in intuition or the Holy Spirit within, there's a lot to look at that covers that. The unconscious beliefs that we have and the unconscious values and all the stories and God knows what else that has to be looked at with the Holy Spirit, in the Holy Spirit's light, and then surrendered. And as we exhume them and give them over, our trust in the intuition or Holy Spirit's voice becomes very, very strong. Very, very strong, as we've learned here. And I'm sure there are a lot of people who are listening who also have had this experience too. Yeah?
Probably, yes. There's quite a few people listening now. So, so I'm sure we have all kinds of clarity and experiences that are out there, hearing this. But, I have a couple more questions for you. So we'll see how it goes. As far as time goes, we have about 15 minutes left. One of my questions, I thought, and of course I could have made a mistake, because I'm very capable of that. But I thought that when I read the portion of your book that you sent me, and you were talking about the real world, I thought that the definition of the real world that you gave in that book was different than what I had always understood. And so I was wondering if you could share again what your understanding of the real world is.
I can't remember.
Okay, well, let me tell you what I remember, and if you think I'm just completely wrong, that's okay. Maybe I am. Say, Regina, I don't think I said that. What I have always thought was that the real world and the happy dream were the same thing, and that the real world and the happy dream would have been the same as what NTI was calling the fourth stage. And that it preceded the passing into pure light. So, and God took the last step, right? God took you from the real world or the happy dream, into the pure light, into the formless.
That's exactly the same as what was revealed to me.
Okay, well then maybe I misread you, because I thought that it was different, but we'll just drop it right there then. I probably just misread, so that's okay. So we'll just skip that question, and we don't even need to have a discussion there. My next question then is, I know there are people who are listening who, at the level of form experience, are sick, and some would even, could be called very sick, although I know them to be happy, joyous people. The bodies are definitely, you know, not ready to run a marathon. I don't know if Cheryl is still here, but as an example, Cheryl has, brain tumors. She has blood clots, she has a broken rib, a broken toe, and I think some other things that I don't even remember what she has. So, you know, in a pretty sick state, you know, physically. My question is, what would, you know, if someone that was sick and yet, you know, practicing to the best of their ability all day, like Cheryl spends all of her time focusing on, spiritual teachings like A Course in Miracles, she talks to Jesus, she follows Jesus's guidance. Is there anything, but yet the sickness continues, is there anything that you would say or recommend to a person who might be experiencing sickness right now as a way of life, and yet they're doing everything they feel guided to do spiritually?
That's a loaded.
Well, and I don't mean to trap you. I'm not trying to set a trap or anything.
I'm going to wring your neck when I see you next time, Regina.
It is my job to ask good questions. And you know the people that are sick. Well, tell you what, why don't we start with something else first? Why don't we start with you talking about, I thought I heard you in the recording from when you were in the room a month ago, talking about how you had a tendency towards osteoporosis.
Yeah.
And that had improved or gone away. You want to talk about that first, and then maybe that will lead you naturally into the next thing.
Okay. Yeah, I think this is good. Thanks, Regina. Actually, all of this is incredibly helpful. The biggest thing about sickness is guilt. But what I'm trying to say, it's the first trap that we fall into, and I'm speaking from my own experience, that I fell into with advanced osteoarthritis and terrible crippling pain that I had for many years, was when these teachings were revealed to me 3 years ago, or beginning to be revealed to me, the first thing that I did is I listened to the ego that said, well, if Jesus is saying a broken body shows the mind is not being healed, then there's no hope for my healing. If after 20 years of studying the Course and living it to the best of my capacity, I must be one guilty son of a bitch, right? And, you know, I had a nosedive. I went through a nosedive because I just listened to this spiritual ego telling me that, look, I'll never make it, yeah? So number one is if we truly want to heal, we have to remember that there's no guilt and there's no judgment, absolutely none, but we won't know that until we go deeper and begin to exude the unconscious fear of God, because it's just the fear of God. It's this deep, deep nucleus of belief that we are guilty and consequently deserving of punishment. And rather than to let the ego's God, and this is so unconscious, this is what I saw for myself, rather than to let God himself punish us, this is sick, but it's what we really deep down believe, we decide to punish ourselves, and that's what sickness is. But as I said before, it's very, very deep. And I had to see this was revealed to me in layers. It wasn't revealed to me all at once in one shebang. It was revealed in layers, and I was very gently asked by Jesus to let go of my deep, unconscious fear of God. But first of all, I needed to ask, what is it? Where is it? And where is it being manifested? Show me it all of it. And I was shown it all. Oh, I don't know, maybe not all of it, because I'd be totally awake now if that was true. But I was shown a great, huge chunk of it. And it was through looking at that with Jesus and giving it over to the Holy Spirit of Jesus that it was taken away. In other words, what happened was my trust in God became so huge, and so quickly, really, relatively quickly when I look back on it, that to the degree that my trust in God's love exclusively became a real experience in me, to that degree, my sickness fell away. Now, that's not just with me, but I've seen that with others, and we have others who have cancer and are healed. We have one dear friend who was in hospice with stage 4 cancer and no hope anymore, and she's at the gym every second day now, walking 2 miles a day, 5 times a week, and that was last year that they gave her the death sentence, yeah? And she's just come back. But I would say if she was able to speak, which she has to me and to us, others, is that she would say that her trust in God is now becoming almost exclusive. It's that degree of trust. That's when our trust in God becomes that strong, then anything that shows up as an appearance opposite to God, like disease or pain, etc., can be looked at by God through our mind and healed. It's through the healed perception. I don't know if I'm making any sense, Regina.
Well, yeah, in fact, I'll tell you who you sound like to me is Joel Goldsmith.
Well, this is not from God.
I don't know if you know Joel Goldsmith, but...
Oh, yeah, Joel. No, this is not from Joel Goldsmith. This is from Nook. I mean, yeah. This is from, you know, the Holy Self, the one Holy Self through Nook. I'm just a conduit at the moment for this. But, you know, I had very severe osteoporosis, and I was told that if I fell, that my hip bone, the pelvis, would turn to talcum powder. Can you imagine? Okay, you know the fear, Regina, I'm talking about, right?
Well, you probably would have broken your wrist more than me then.
Now, you know, what they put me on, or what they tried to put me on, was all forms of these bone-strengthening drugs, and God knows what else. Of course, I was menopausal as well, which they say, in the ego's dream and the ego's laws, it gets a lot worse. Well, when I went to have the bone density scan, they were gobsmacked because I don't have osteoporosis any longer. And that's without taking all those drugs, right?
Yes.
So, you know, what in heaven happened? It's a bit like your broken toe, you know, you can't explain it.
Yeah.
You just can't explain it.
Well, I'll tell you what I heard you say, Nook. And when I asked you an original question, and you know, you didn't feel to go right into it, but when I turned it around and asked about your osteoporosis, you gave an answer, and I want to see if you think this is the answer to the original question. I asked, you know, what you would say to someone who was sick, and what you talked about was looking at your fear of God and learning to trust God completely. And to the degree that you trusted God, your illness fell away. So my next question then is, if somebody was really saying, but how, you know, because I'm doing the very best I know how, is there anything specific, an exercise, anything you would recommend to help them look at that fear of God if they just don't seem to be getting there on their own?
Absolutely. On the new website, it's called endofdeath.com, endofdeath.com. There's, let me just think, because this has all come out the last couple of days, so I'm just trying to think in my mind what it's called, the page. There's a banner, very bright, brilliant banner that says supplemental materials package, right? Exercises. Click on that, and it'll take you to some exercises. If you don't have the end of death, it will take you to some exercises that will help to just kickstart it. And the biggest exercise for that is the fear of God exercise. But to do it, make sure you've got some time alone, no interruptions by phone or internet or anybody walking in on you. And to, you know, light a candle, do whatever it takes, do a meditation beforehand, and really get into that heart space where you and the Holy Spirit are one, and then begin to do the exercise, yeah? Because the exercise is to begin to reveal to us this deep unconscious split in our minds. That's one of the exercises. There are many in the end of death. Well, this is only Volume 1. There are many in Volume 2 and Volume 3 which aren't out yet, but at least to get a starter on that. But I would recommend, please do read The End of Death. You can get it on Kindle for, I don't know, $10 or something, so it's not expensive. And just read it and do the exercises in there. I mean, this is going to help so much for you, for everybody, to be able to exhume these unconscious blocks. And look, I did the course for 20 years. I didn't know I had these blocks. You know, I was so shocked. I thought, my God, and I felt guilty because I'd written a book on A Course in Miracles, and yet I still had all these unconscious blocks that I had no idea existed, even after 20 years. So these exercises are aimed to really go to the nucleus of our deep unconscious blocks, to the awareness of God, and to see how split our mind is. That's when we see it, that's when we can go, oh, okay, all right, I give this to you, Holy Spirit, to heal completely. And we can begin to trust in the Holy Spirit more and more, and begin to trust that the Holy Spirit has us covered, right? That's a big thing. That's such a big thing, to know completely that any kind of pain, either emotional pain or conflict or physical pain or disease, etc., or poverty, scarcity, whatever it might be, is just not God's will. In fact, when we're experiencing it, we're experiencing a defense against God's will. You know, when we align with the problem, when we believe the problem, we are not with God. And this is a very different pathway. It doesn't make any other pathway wrong, but it is a very different pathway, this course in miracles. That's why it's taken me, you know, at the end of death, to write the end of death, to explain it in layman's terms, yeah?
Yeah. Well, so yeah. We only have, gosh, about another minute. Although I doubt they'll crucify us if we go over a little, but I like to kind of end on time. I have another quick question. Do you think that there is a difference, about how you approach these exercises? For example, does it matter whether I approach these exercises because I want to discover my fear of God, I want to discover my guilt, and I want to be, you know, purified, I want to trust God completely, or I approach these exercises because I want my body healed? Do you think there's a difference?
Oh, God, Regina, what a fabulous question. Oh, my God. Right, okay. This one of the steps in, and I won't go over time, I'm trying not to, one of the steps in accepting atonement and forgiveness is to make healing of my mistaken perception my priority over everything else. Because if I make the priority to heal, you know, to heal my broken body, then I'm lost. I'm God. I'm gone, and Holy Spirit cannot help me. Because there is no broken body, because there is no body.
All right. That was great. I'm glad we ended with that. And you know what? We're right on schedule. It's 7:30. It's a miracle.
You did.
All right. Thank you, Nook. I'm going to release the mic and then just say a private goodbye to Nook, everyone. But thank you for coming and listening to Nook. And Sparrow is here. Thank you, Sparrow. She's giving people information about the exercises in the book and on the website. And I'm going to release the mic and turn it over to Lynn. Goodbye, everyone. All right, and let me stop the recording, and then...